Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, and we are going to try something a little different for a season. Every week I go in and visit with Kevin Miller and have an absolute blast. We're going to go ahead and replay that. It's about 30 minutes every Monday. We'd like to hear your feedback if you enjoy it. If not, let us know, and I'll be talking to you live in about 30 minutes.
And Kevin Miller in the morning here, 580KIDO, our great friend, Dave Petzo with us. Dave, good to have you with us.
It's good to be here, Kevin.
Once again, Dave Petzo, Saturdays 8 to 10, Money Matters. How many years now?
26, I think.
26, 27.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Seen a lot of people come and go here.
Keep adding up. I know. It's weird that I'm here the longest at the station.
You are. You are the one constant in an ever-changing monetary media dynamic. That is amazing.
I wouldn't have thought that 27 years ago, but yeah.
Look, folks, consistency pays off.
It's been great. It really has. And working with you is really, you're easy. You're easy to work with, Kevin.
I try. Look, I don't have much, so I just like
easy and hard. I mean, you're challenging, no doubt. I have no idea what you're going to come with every week.
Neither do I. That makes it even better. Let's start with low gasoline prices here at 580KIDO. I was sharing with the folks moments ago the special on CBS Sunday morning when they went to Midland, Texas. They went to the Balkans. Now oil hovering around 30-ish. It jumped up last week to 35. Now with the Iranians coming back online, does that mean anything to consumers when... And by the way, as we just heard, gas, the lowest price in America, $1.49 in Oklahoma. So what does that mean for folks here in Idaho?
Well, you know, it's obviously gas prices are coming down, and it means we spend less at the gas pump, theoretically, more elsewhere, or at least our savings rate is going higher. So the answer is overall it's good for the economy, Kevin. As we've discussed many times, there's still disruptions in the economy. You still have pockets out there that are very energy dependent, and those are not doing well at all, and it's going to get much worse there before it ever gets better. Even if prices head higher, we're on that trajectory now where drilling is coming down, there's less drilling rigs put to work, and they will not go back to work immediately, even if energy prices jump back up, and nobody's predicting that anyway.
Well, and that's the funny thing when you think about this, whether it's in Texas, the Balkans, and now we hear that there are just oil tankers sitting off the coast of these countries.
Yep.
Because they can't come in because economically it doesn't pay to process this. So with the Iranians coming in, we're going to have more oil.
Yep.
This is great, but is there a downside, and could we take a look at the fluctuations in the stock market as, you know, coming from the oil drop-off?
No, there's no question that there are impacts, and it's not just the oil sector. As we've talked before, it's steel because we put so much steel into the ground. And as we've mentioned before, those people making $20 an hour at McDonald's are not going to be making $20 at McDonald's because the jobs are not so scarce in those parts of the world anymore. So that's a negative. Also, for future production, the technology there and the firms that really grow that and service the oil industry, they're really taking a beating. So as far as our future development, that's down a lot. And of course, that is going to be very, very slow to come back, Kevin. Prices have to go up a lot and be sustainably higher. So, yeah, there are definitely negatives to it.
This is what a lot of folks, including myself, we don't understand. But if gas is cheaper, then flying is cheaper, driving is cheaper. Wouldn't the steel be cheaper because of the cost of building it would be cheaper?
It is, and that's the problem, right? If you're a steel maker, you don't want cheaper steel because there's so much abundance. Is it cheaper to make? Of course. It's a very high energy draining, you know, commodity, so you wind up saving on the cost of making it, but not nearly enough when there is such an oversupply around the world. All the steel makers, whether it's from Korea to the U.S., are suffering mightily, and many of them are going to go out of business, just like we do every cycle.
Indeed. So, as far as regionally, what do you have to share with us here at 580 KIDO? I guess we could call this your Channel 7 segment, and then we'll get back to the potpourri of questions for Kevin Miller.
What's going on regionally?
Yes.
Regionally. Okay. Well, we continue to boom regionally, as we all know. This is a very, very good time to be in the West, in the Intermountain West. It's not such a good time if you're in those oil states as it was not too long ago. But there's no doubt that we're growing. Oregon, Washington, Colorado, all through the mountains, the Mountain West, it's doing very, very well. People like this region. Outdoors, they're moving here, and with technology, they can do their jobs from their home, or at the very least, it's very inexpensive to start up a business in this region, and so people are, and they're moving from the cities and from the coasts, and they want a better life, and that's why they come here.
Well, and, you know, I ran into a couple people this weekend at the Canyon County Kids Expo. We've got a lot of new restaurants opening up. We've got Homestead Bar and Grill in Meridian. We've got On a Roll. We'll roll out in downtown Eagle. Speedy Burger. We'll fry them up near Poho's. So we've got a lot of service industry coming mm-hmm. here. Is that good for the overall economy here in the Treasure Valley?
Yes, and it's also a symptom of a good economy, right? You don't get people coming in and opening up new restaurants if we do not have a boom in the population and the drive to spend money. And if people are just barely getting by, they are not going to be out buying expensive hamburgers, et cetera. So the answer is, Kevin, yeah, it's a symptom of how well we are doing.
Dave Fetzel with us as we continue on here. Kevin Miller in the morning. We'll take your calls in a minute. Okay, what happened in the markets? Okay, you had a bad month. A bad this, bad that. And then, once again, I'm driving home and I go, Petso did it again. It was a great way to wrap up the month, right?
It was a great way to wrap
and
up
go,
the month.
And I go,
why did it just fall apart?
I said, why does it have to be good on Friday? But anyway.
It isn't usually good on Friday. Not like that, right? Yeah. Heading into the weekend? Absolutely. Yeah, it was a tremendous week. This is amazing, though, Kevin. It was partly triggered on Friday by Japan going negative with interest rates. So QE is alive and well in the world, and interest rates went negative in Japan.
Well, Japan, China, finally from our friend Bob, and then we'll go to Terry from State College, Pennsylvania, and your phone calls from our great friend Dave Petzl, and we'll talk some more issues as far as economic opportunities. We'll go back to our Petzl for Governor, Petzl for President segment as well. But Dave P., how come flying isn't getting cheaper? Just heard a report that it isn't. Are the airlines gouging us?
No, they're not.
Oh, come on. Wait
well,
a minute. Wait.
I know. It was a softball. I could have just hit that right out of the park.
I was hoping those greedy, grubbing airliners.
I know. And rip on the oil companies.
Yes!
The Chinese are
join
next.
The dark side.
I know. It's easy enough to embrace. No, they're not. They're actually not, believe it or not. There are some things out there that are gouging. There's no question. Like the energy surcharge that we pay for tickets. You also pay it on your overnight packages. Those need to be gotten rid of. But they, you know, until somebody probably brings a lawsuit about it, that's not going to happen. But we are seeing the economy is not as robust, and we're seeing airlines not quite as profitable as people thought. So, Kevin,
how can that be when and you travel more than most, you're stuffed in there, they
yep.
cancel flights, sometimes you get trapped in places, and they whine and cry when fuel prices go up.
Yes. Well, this is, now, Kevin, this is the first time, honestly, that we've seen the airline industry, you know, globally profitable. This is the first time in like 30 years. It's an amazing industry where more and more people travel, and they manage to have more and more bankruptcies. But this time they got it right, or more right, if you will. They cut back on flights, and then the airplanes got full. Now they're expanding, and some of the seats are available on planes. I'm not saying that they're not crowded. I'm not saying that the airlines are flushing cash, but it's not as profitable as it was a couple quarters ago.
Let's go to the phones, and we go to Terry from State College, Pennsylvania, for our friend Dave Fetzo at 580KIDO. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, gentlemen. David, you know, this is something that you and I have had quite the difference in opinion here for quite a while. Question for you. Do you agree or disagree that at this point we're seeing a slow, systematic collapse of the global economy? Now, I didn't say bottomed out, and I didn't say, you know, zombies, but would you agree or disagree on that?
Well, I think collapse is a bit of a strong word, so I guess I disagree, but that seemed like a chosen word, that we're into a global collapse. Are we into a global slowdown? Clearly, we are into a global slowdown.
We're deflating?
Well, they are certainly in commodities, absolutely. There's no question about that. There's no question that we've got serious concerns, that whether it's the central bankers in Europe or the central bankers here, are very, very concerned about deflationary prices. The good news is that overall, when we take energy out of the equation, it is not a deflationary environment yet, but it's close enough that there are absolutely warrants being closely watched.
Now, wait a minute, Terry. First of all, you start with David. That's very serious, very inflammatory, very provocative here at 580KIDO. Do you agree with Dave Fetzo that life is good, or do you believe our collapse is imminent?
The collapse is imminent, and you know, all your big hitters are saying it. They said, hey, we told you 2 years ago what was coming. We told you a year ago what was coming. We're telling you today we have a long ways to go till we hit bottom, but there's definitely a bottom right now that's not going to look good.
Well, Dave Fetzo, Terry is calling you out.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. You know, there's no question. People have been calling for the bottom to fall out of this market, out of the world, for 35 years, the entire time I've been in the industry. So
we have never seen anything like this, David. This is really unprecedented. And I think another evident point is Japan certainly made a point here when they said, okay, we're going to continue the currency war that is taking place globally. Are they continuing a war in the currency market?
Oh, certainly, yes, absolutely. Okay. And I think the Federal Reserve is concerned enough about what's going on globally, including our own companies here that are multinational, that they're having trouble with the strong dollar.
Oh, I'm sorry. The last meeting the Fed just had, they did something they've never done before. Usually they close and say, we foresee this problem ahead. They closed the market. They closed their meeting. And they didn't say, we foresee this problem, we foresee that problem. So they're really concerned, very worried, because there's more than one problem.
All right. Thank you, Terry, from State College, Pennsylvania. John, we'll get to you in a minute. And coming up next, what does Dave Fetzo and Damon Lewis have in, what do they have in common? And maybe Paul Giamatti.
This is Money Matters with Dave Fetzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's talk station.
Well, I looked down at my hands and was like, wow, I'm performing CPR on this guy. And then I actually finally met him. That's probably one of the coolest parts of my life, being able to talk to a guy after I gave him CPR.
Reed was just 17 when he heard a cry for help. Thanks to his Red Cross training, he didn't freeze, he didn't panic, he knew exactly what to do. Red Cross training saves lives. Sign up for a class.
This is Money Matters with Dave Fetzo on Idaho's talk station, 580KITO.
And as the dry air continues to resonate from the broadcast center, it happens to me all the time. Now, last week I had the hiccups in the studio. It was fascinating for everybody.
Oh, I'll bet
during
that
the show.
Was.
Yes,
no,
was
that's great.
Wonderful.
That's great.
Anyway, I've been thinking about you a lot on Sunday nights.
Okay.
There's a new Showtime series called Billions, and it's between Paul Giamatti and Damon Lewis. It's a drama about power politics in the world of New York high finance, and you have Giamatti, the U.S. attorney, and then you have Bobby Axelrod, played by Lewis, the hedge fund king, and they're going back and forth. How much regulation is there in your business, and when they're making these dramas, how realistic do you think they can actually get?
I think that there's, that's fascinating. I saw part of that, actually. I was visiting my daughter, and so I have to ask you how to get that, because it looked like...
Ever the fiscal conservative, you don't have Showtime.
I don't have Showtime.
Yes.
That's it. That's
You'll
right.
love it.
Hey, my TV hasn't been on in ages. The only TV on is with the one in the hotel room when I
You're
went to visit.
Busy generating profits for the American public. I understand.
You're right, exactly.
You'll love it. You'll love it.
I did love it. So anyway, I thought it was well done. But anyway, the answer is, Kevin, twofold. There are huge, huge regulations in our industry. Most of them are beyond stupid, okay? Because in a bureaucrat world, if we require more paper, quotes, more disclosure, that leads them to believe that there's better, that they're doing their job if they create more paper. And I don't care if it's, just our industry. The amount of paper has doubled in just 5 years. So it's bureaucrats on steroids. But at the same time, most of these rules come because somebody's done something at some point. Now, it has become so much paper that nobody reads anything, and it's gotten bad. But at the same time, some of the rules make great sense, and we never would have had something like a Bernie Madoff, speaking of the hedge fund world, if we had simply followed some normal rules, which are you do not custody assets, meaning I don't have assets at Petzl Financial. I don't have your money. It's held somewhere else away from us.
Now we get to the truth. However, speaking of Madoff, Richard Dreyfuss is playing him this week in an ABC series.
Oh, really?
Titled Madoff.
Oh, okay. What an original name. Okay.
Exactly. We go to the phones. Dave Petzl blowing it up here this morning. We go to John in Meridian. Good morning. You're on 580 KIDO. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Hey, David, you had mentioned that Japan's got negative interest rates. So yeah. I don't understand. Are they paying people to borrow money or what?
Yeah, they're actually people are paying them to hold money. That's really what you do when you have negative interest rates. It's a great question. I'm glad you asked, because people assume somehow that makes sense. To me, it never made sense that I borrow money and you get paid. But the answer is, if you have money in the Federal Reserve system or in theirs, the Bank of Japan's system, you have to now start paying to have the deposits there. That's how they're taking interest rates negative. So they want the banking system to be lending it back out into the system, not holding it in reserve, which is what, and again, this is not suddenly overnight. So I just want to mention that those people, this is how much they were getting before. 0.1%, and they were getting zero on required reserves. Now on new reserves, it's gone to negative 0.1. So you have to pay to keep those reserves there, but it's only on new money, not on what they've had there.
All right, John, thank you for the call. We continue on here at 580 KIDO. Let's go to Dave in Weezer. Good morning, Dave. Dave for Dave Petzl.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
I'd like to ask Dave a question.
Fire away.
I'm curious about subsidies that goes on, even for the oil industry, the ethanol subsidies, and even green energy. And if he could maybe expound on a few other things that this oil, the drop in oil prices is would help us or not. The taxpayers are still paying too much. I'll take my answer off the air, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. First of all, the subsidies across every industry are vast, and that's why the whole lobbying industry is so huge back in D.C. Carly Fiorina, who is not exactly a doesn't have a big fan base around here, still has done a very good job of explaining crony capitalism, which is the biggest get bigger because they have the lobbyists and they have the lawyers to follow all the rules. So yes, they're getting to be more and more and more rules, but crony capitalism in every industry is rampant. I don't think it's particularly bad in, say, energy versus any other. I think it's bad all the way across the board because it limits access. It distorts markets. The free market is what makes all of us wealthy, not the controlled market. And the bureaucrats have gone crazy with power and paper. And somebody's just going to have to shoot the bureaucrats. It's got to happen.
Now, wait a minute. That is Dave Petzl.
Maybe shoots too much. How about
advocating for shoot the bureaucrats?
Right. How about we have to make a concerted effort from the highest levels? We need Reagan-esque type of presidency that said we do not need all of these departments, and every department has got to cut back and figure out what their impact is. Regulation is devastating to U.S. industry, I believe much more so than the antiquated tax system we have here.
And back to the phones for Dave Petso. John in Boise, thanks for your patience. You're on 580KIDO.
Yeah, I've got one quick comment and then a question for Dave. Have you ever thought about the irony of Madoff's last name? He made off with everybody's investments.
It is. It's a perfect name. You could not. It's like Snidely Whiplash, isn't it? It's perfect.
Yeah. So here's my prediction. You tell me what you think, Dave. I think with all these wells shutting down, I had a friend who was working in South Dakota. He would show up at the airport. He was with one of the big drilling companies. They'd send him to Australia, all expenses paid, air flight, moon board, salary that you could not believe. And he'd work for 3 or 4 months, come back home for 3 or 4. And as the oil prices started to drop, the first thing that they said is, well, you're going to have to start paying your own airport price. Air freight. We're not going to pay for you to fly anymore. You got to buy your own tickets. And he started to see the handwriting on the wall, and he decided, oh, I better get into some other industry because pretty soon this thing is going to fail.
Yeah.
I think all these wellheads that they've been putting in, the fracking as well as other wellheads, they'll start capping them off because there's no point in bringing up more oil. The companies, especially the small ones, will go bankrupt, and there'll be investors that will swoop in and for a dime on the dollar buy these things up if they're, you know, international investors or local or people like Mr. Trump just buying them up like crazy, mm-hmm. holding on to them till the gas in the summertime goes back up to $3-4, and open up the wells again and start cleaning up on them. What do you think about that?
Well, you're close. As far as the wells themselves, they probably will not be shut in, only those that are really marginal. And what I mean by marginal is you're only pulling up maybe one barrel or two barrels a day, right? These are just the residual wells. It's not worth shooting them full of hot steam and things like that to get them to produce more. Those will get shut in, and probably permanently. These are not going to be reopened, although not a lot of those will go down because a lot of those are in very strong hands. They just have fields of these things that are just, you know, just minor producers, and it really isn't a huge needle mover. Now, some of them will, because you're only producing one barrel, you can't even afford to tend that well anymore. So some of those will. As far as the rest go, you're correct broadly, but you do not go in and frack and get a well ready, especially in the shale properties, because they have very high production right off the bat. They're not going to shut that production in, which is why in 15 we actually saw an increase in production, because the wells had been drilled. They are going to produce. Now we are not seeing anywhere near as many oil rigs or drilling rigs out there. So watching what the rig count is what's key. And if they're coming down, it's come down unbelievably. And it's come down globally, by the way. So we're going to see, I think we've seen peak production for right now, certainly in the United States, and it'll be a long time before we get back to it. But it takes a while to get that production down. It's the expenses up front. And so they are going to finish up those wells. They're going to let them leak out. What you're going to see wide open is the space between the wells that isn't going to be drilled in the future. That's what people are going to pick up and run with.
And, John, thank you for the call. Dave Petso, we appreciate you. Petso Center, Petso Financial, Petso on Facebook, Petso Twitter, Petso Instagram yet?
Not on Instagram. No.
Almost, though. You're ready to make that
leap. But I have to say this, too, because I'm getting great kudos on this, okay? For Saturday, we replay this on Saturday mornings, and people are really enjoying it. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Another 26 years for you.
I hope so.
Yes.
Yes. Yay. Go.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. With Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and welcome. Yes, we're live. Thanks for joining us. And the number, of course, is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And if you do prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Dave@petsofinancial.net. Well, we had some mixed economic economic news, to say the least, right, on Friday. And, of course, it's all about oil and trading, right? I mean, isn't that what they're all saying? It's all about oil. Is it? So one Friday ago, we're up 400 points on the Dow, and oil goes down. 2 days before that, same, similar anyway, markets up, oil's down. Earlier this week, no connection. But when it happens to move the same direction, boom, it's all about oil. You can't have it both ways. Some days it's about oil, some days it's not. We just look around and the market moves, and then we go, okay, what correlations do we think we have? Put the label on that. And that's how we do it. That's crazy. Of course. But we feel the need as human beings to find exactly why something's happening. Why is it? Why is it that the sky is blue? Why is it that the market went up? Why is it that it went down? And we look for a reason why. And we have to have a label every time, so that tomorrow we can try to predict what that label will do. So do I think oil prices will keep going down, if that's what causes the market to go down? And we always want to find a reason instead of sometimes just accepting, which, of course, is difficult in life, right, to just accept that things happen and it may not actually have an explanation. It doesn't matter what in life we do. We always look for that explanation. It doesn't matter what in life we're talking about. We don't like it when there is no explanation. I don't think there's any explanation right now why the market is doing what it's doing. I haven't heard one answer. It's all about oil. It's all about the fear of a global recession. It's all about China. It's all about whatever somebody labels it, and then it seems to change a few days later, and we morph into something else as to why. And we just accept that. Having a different answer tomorrow is totally okay. The oil up and then prices on the market go down, that's okay. I accept that now it's about something completely different. And we accept it. And, of course, that's pretty crazy. It really is. We don't need an explanation. There isn't one. There's no question that people are fed up with the market. So volume is low. So fundamental and buyers are low. So the machines can push it around on low volume. But what happens then? That's an easy explanation. Good. That's great. Let's tag that. But what happens on those days or with those stocks like yesterday? LinkedIn turns around and loses 45% in a day. What's that? Did they announce they were closing the doors, that it was over, that they were going to lay off half of their workforce? Or did they, like, miss a little bit on projecting the most glorious year ahead? Yeah. Kind of like that. So what moves 45%? Dysfunctional markets do. And it's dysfunctional. There's no question it's dysfunctional. There is no explanation. And there's not an explanation that's going to stop tomorrow. These things just stop. And as we'll talk later today, we have to actually, if we're trying to be good investors, we have to actually buy into this type of nonsense. Let alone running from it. I think we all know better than, you know, you panic. What we should do is we should panic and we should get out and wait for things to calm down. What does that mean? What it means when things calm down is that prices are significantly higher. Not just higher than today, higher than yesterday, higher than a couple weeks ago, higher than a month ago. Much, much, much higher. We all do this, and we all say this, and then we'll also watch yourself when you think about this, okay? Watch yourself when you think about this, because in the end, you're going to say, yeah, but. You will in your head.
what the market's going to do. We don't know what's going to happen. And if you step out of the market, you now have to get back in. And when you get back in, we all say this, I want to buy low, I want to sell high, I want to buy into distress, I want to buy great bargains. And then when we get 20, 25, 30% off of the great corporations in the world, and many are, and I don't mean many in the oil sector, many in every sector. Google just announced unbelievable earnings. They were perfect. They were better than perfect. So far above expectations, the stock soared in after-hours trading. It's now actually below where it was before it announced that they were the king of the world. Isn't that crazy? That's crazy. It's crazy. And I know, but see, the thing is where we all go wrong on this is we all think, yeah, but I wouldn't act quite that way. Yeah, but I wouldn't really do it like that, where I would really wait until prices got a lot higher. We all do, because the uncertainty is so uncertain that it really doesn't lead to anything that quiets down, settles in, creates a nice base, sends out a smoke signal or whatever that, hey, this is it, and things are pretty calm, but prices haven't risen yet, so therefore it'd be a good time to re-enter. So when people say, well, what am I supposed to do? Just take it? Just sit around and watch prices decline? Yeah, actually, yes. Yes. That and one other thing. And you won't do it. I know you won't do it, but yeah, it has to be said. You buy. You take the cash that's there, you buy. You let the dividends reinvest. It's hard. I know. Look, I don't know what's going on. I don't know when it ends. I really don't. Markets do this from time to time. And I don't know why we always have to act like it's a brand new thing that's never happened before. It's all weird and we don't know what to do. You think people knew what to do in the last bear market and the one before that and the one before that and the one before that? And nobody knows. You don't know when it's going to end. You don't know why it's happening. You don't know why it's getting worse. And then everybody's running around telling you why it's this and why it's that. And it leads us to believe that there really are answers. And the only real answer is put your head down and keep doing what you do that's always been right to do. Own the great corporations of the world. And know that there are going to be times where it's chaotic. That's the way it goes. It's not fun. But it's how bargains are created. And they are. Even if you and I don't like it in the meantime. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. We need to take a quick break, and hopefully we'll be visiting with you on the other side. It's 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. And again, if you prefer email, it's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Let's go to our friend Jim. Jim, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Dave?
Good. Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, on Tuesday, I dropped about 28,000 into the old stock market. I did it not for the stock market, not for me, but in honor of the mighty groundhog.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, that's an interesting strategy. Has that worked for you in the past?
Two financial stocks and two technology stocks. I had all this cash running around, and I had to do something with it, so.
Absolutely. Did you choose some dividend payers or growth?
Well, I bought again B of A. That was stupid. That was emotional because I had worked for them years ago. But I also got some Wells Fargo and, well, and some IBM and one called, well, Microchip Technologies. They all pay a dividend. But, you know, I've heard warnings these days from people saying don't rely too much on dividend payers.
Well, that always happens after whatever sector it is they're talking about. Like, watch for, you know, be careful of growth stocks. You might see that next week because now all of a sudden we've got Amazon and Google and others that actually had tremendous reports that are now in trouble. My point being is this, you know, a couple of years ago when dividend-paying stocks were all the rage, so to speak, there was no doubt you should be buying dividend payers, right?
Right.
Now, after the last 2 years, watch out for dividend payers becomes the mantra. It's always after the fact. We look back and know exactly what has worked and what hasn't. The only thing that's worked over the last 2 years actually has been U.S. gigantic growth, meaning Amazon, Google, Netflix, Starbucks, that kind of stuff. That's all it's worked.
Well, yeah.
The dividend payers haven't, which to me is now saying, I don't want to buy low. I don't want to buy stuff that hasn't worked for the last 2 years. I want to buy the stuff that's really high priced that has worked the last 2 years. So, Jim, I actually disagree with that comment, of course, but not you, but what you had read and shared. And I think that it's a perfect time to be going into the dividend payers of the world.
Well, one bit of a harbinger, you know, and you figure that the whole idea is that, you know, when the economy contracts, eventually companies stop, you know, don't make as much money, so they have to restrict their dividend. Well, the first harbinger, I guess, might be ConocoPhillips, which cut their dividend by 2/3.
Right.
And I've got, you know, one called Williams Company, right?
Yes.
Okay, now for about 6 dividends in a row, not only did they pay the dividend, they increased the dividend. Now, I'm pretty much of a conservative kind of a guy, right?
Right.
And a lot of these companies, they aren't conservative, you know. They'll do something stupid like that, and then when the economy turns south, then they're in big trouble.
Then they have to cut like crazy, and they've got no cash flow. I know.
Right.
That happens, and so that's why I always say, Jim, you got to be careful. I'm not talking about the dividend growers. That's a completely different ballgame. But the companies you just talked about, okay?
Right.
The Wells Fargo, the Bank of America, and whatever else it was you talked about buying. My point is, those are dividend growers. Those are not dividend payers or high yielders that are about to they'd only pay the dividend because times are really perfect, and or they go into further debt in order to pay their dividends. Those are the high dividend payers, and the reason their dividend is high is because everybody knows we are one spin or two spins of the globe away from them cutting their dividend.
Well,
it's not sustainable.
Like you said, you know, it's you know, beware of the yield, you know.
Yes.
And that's what got the Madoff so-called victims that deserved it because they were blithering idiots, but that's what got them in trouble. When Madoff could pay stuff that was obviously ridiculous.
Right, and way too consistent, which is why it was spotted by so many people, except for the SEC. And the SEC, of course, we all know, was in fact notified that they should watch out for that. But we all know that, and that's water under the bridge. But the point is high yield, too much consistency in that yield, all spell problems, even if it's a real company, not just a Ponzi scheme.
Well, for one thing, to put all your money with one person, what part of that makes sense? You know.
Well, in one type of investment, of course. Yeah, exactly. Right.
But
right.
Anyway, so you know and I was hoping that Tuesday, because I'd look forward to it, because I had to sell the stock to take a loss last year. You know, I had to wait 31 days, and so I was aiming for the second February 2nd to be down, and it was. So I
there you go.
Hand.
So off you go.
Here we go.
Well, good for you. You got some nice bargains. They're certainly a lot cheaper than they were 31 days ago, and
so
everything is.
You just invest, and if you want to, pray, have faith, whatever. Just do it.
Exactly. Exactly, okay. Jim. Jim, thank you, sir.
Take care.
Hey, have a great day. Thanks
you too,
for calling.
Thanks.
And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. We've got to take our final break, and we will be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. We're going to be back in hour number two, of course, and we do want your calls. And if you have a question, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net, P-E-T-S-O, not the sauce, P-E-T-S-O Financial.net. Let's go ahead and go real quickly to Matt. Matt, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Well, I just had a question on investing. In 1964, you could buy a cup of coffee with a single dime. In 2015, you can only buy about one-tenth of a cup of coffee with a dime, with a fiat dime. If you have a dime from 1964, though, today, that single dime will buy you almost two cups of coffee. I don't understand how you can say that that fiat government paper notes are better investments than silver.
Well, I can only give you a couple of thoughts regarding that. One is that, of course, if you get no return at all on silver, you have to find somebody else that wants a pretty brick, whether it's gold or silver, and is willing to pay more for that, because there's absolutely no fundamental reason to do so, to pay more for that. That's how you would make money on a pretty brick. But I'm certainly not a big proponent of government paper, never have been, and that's because of inflation. But still, when I started in the industry, silver was in the $20 range on its way to 50 within about a year, and that was 35 years ago. Silver is lower priced than it was then, and it has had no dividends. So I'm not sure what safety net that had or why that was a good investment. Stocks are up from 750 on the Dow. Now, honestly, that's the low. So let's make it 840, because that's what it actually was when I started. So from 840 to, after our slide here, to 16,000-ish, that's a 20-fold increase. I'll take that every day, and owning the great corporations of the world that can become more productive and do over their lifetime. Hey, I'm sorry, Matt. Hey, if you got more, call us in the next hour. But right now, we've got to take a break for Fox News. We'll talk to you after that.
I guess sometimes things just happen. Devastating things. It's got nothing to do with fairness. Bam. Your whole world changes in an instant. And you never see it coming. That's what happened to me the day my mother had a stroke.
I'm Paul George, and I want you to learn the signs of a stroke fast. F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. S, speech difficulty. T, time to call 911. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Protect the ones you love. Spot a stroke. F-A-S-T. Fast.
You know, that I think that's crazy. And it changes every day, doesn't it? I mean, has it been helpful to have everybody screaming and yelling, it's all tied to oil, and then it's not the next day? And then, of course, it is the next day after that, and then it's not. And then it's all tied to China, and China's melting down, and then, wait a minute, the Shanghai was up 4% last night, and our market was down. Huh? Not all tied. Sometimes it's just broken. So that leads to this. You know, first of all, there's always questions, right? So you get the question, is what do I do if I have some cash? How do you do? Whether that cash is, hey, my 401k paid out, I just sold some property. What do I do? And so for this education segment, if you will, I just thought we'd kind of review How is it? What do you do in a circumstance where you have a little bit of cash, regardless of whether the money market's up, down, good, bad, in your opinion? And it's interesting now because those people that have cash or a large amount of cash in their portfolios relative to the rest, because all of it's relative, right? Somebody has $1 million cash and a, you know, $20 million portfolio is really not a lot of cash, is it? Somebody that has $100,000 cash in a $300,000 portfolio has a lot of cash. It's a relative statement. And relatively often, as I've said before, you want to add to your positions when they're down. If you really want to do something proactive, I don't care if it's $500, if it's $50,000, it doesn't matter. Do something, add to your positions. Because if not now, when? When? If not now, when? I mean, I know there's fear. Exactly. Low prices equals fear. Got it. I want to buy low. No, I don't, because then there's fear. Right? So that's the honest truth. It's what we do. So what do you do? How do you do it? How do we add? What do you do? You put it all in? And the answer is, yeah, you do. That's what they say. I disagree. Statistically, you should absolutely, absolutely put it all in right now, because the market most days, most weeks, most years is up. Well, that'd be crazy into this environment because it's a bad environment. No, it's not crazy. If you really could just bite it and do it, go ahead. That's fine. Again, statistically, it's the correct answer. And frankly, that's, I like that. I like that. But I disagree. When times are tough, and they usually are, or times are particularly good, and then I think it's tough too. And that's why I say it usually is. Is it usually easy to know what's going on in the market? No. It's either too good and therefore prices are too high, or it's really kind of choppy, awful, and there's lots of noise out there, and I don't want to invest into that either. So you set up a plan. First, you have to decide right now, how lucky that I have cash now. I can buy the great corporations of the world at 20, 25% off, not all of them. But goodness gracious, from the highs? I mean, can you imagine a statement like this? You know, Google, I think, will announce earnings that are so good, it will make them the highest valued company in the world. That's what I think will happen this week. And then we will find, after an announcement that is so good, it does make them the highest valued company in the world, we will watch the stock collapse and go down below what it was prior to this unbelievable announcement. Weird. What do we have with Amazon? Same. Just goes down every day. Well, I don't want to try to catch a falling knife or whatever you want to, cliche you want to toss out. I get that. But if you're going to buy low, what do you do? You buy. So here's what I would suggest you do, because we can't win at this game. Remember, that is the fundamental problem for most people within the market. You're a loser, and the market proves it every day. Loser. It proves it. Because when you buy, the market will keep going down on whatever it is you buy. It may only go down a day. It may only go down a week. It might go down over a year, and then you're really stupid, of course. And whatever you sold to reposition will continue to go up. Think of it another way. I put, over my working career, $250,000, say, into my 401k. It grows to over $1 million, say, $1.2 million, $1.25 million. And then we have, again, I mean, if you can believe it, they have not repealed the bear markets. It's weird, but they haven't stopped them. And so we have a normal bear market. Again, I know, so weird. It's like when you retire, they should outlaw them. I understand that, but they don't. And so we have a normal bear market, and your account drops all the way back to $1 million. Now, this is how the human mind works every single time. You don't then say to your children and grandchildren to teach them a life lesson, you know what, I only put in $250,000 and it's worth $1 million. I've made $750,000 on my investments. It's unbelievable. All I did was take a little bit out of my account. Every month, they did it automatically through work. Unbelievable. I didn't have to manage it. I didn't have to sweep the sidewalk. I didn't have to make any investment decisions at all. I just put the money in. And then I left it alone. Bumped around a lot. Here it is. I made $750,000. Nobody says that. Nobody says that ever. What do they say, right? We all know, right? It went from 1.25 down to 1 million. We tell everybody, I just lost $250,000. Loser. We figure out every single way we can to be a loser in the greatest game ever. We try to game the greatest game ever. Why? I mean, if you walk into a casino, do they like want to do some kind of weird voodoo dance? Do they want to change the dynamic? Do they want to like walk over and change everything? Or do they just play the game and let the odds fall out? Do they stop letting the slot machines go? You know, do they flip a switch and say, we're just going to stop playing for 10 minutes? No, they just play. They just keep going. And the statistics win out in the end always. Why don't we do that? So here's how to, in my mind, fight that. I've got money. Here's what you do. You take 25% of it, and you don't even think about it. You put it in tomorrow. Now, get it done. Just do it. You start investing. In what? Well, I'm really nervous about the market. Okay, fine. Then buy dividend-paying stocks globally, the great corporations of the world. Let their dividends reinvest. And if you're lucky enough that prices stay down for a while, you will compound more shares of the great corporations in the world, and therefore you'll have more income for life. Pretty simple. Or honestly, this is what a lot of people think. This is why it's nuts. Yeah, again, Matt, I'm not putting Matt down. Matt's very common out there. Well, you know, fiat currencies and all that we've all heard that all of our life. And it's true. There has to be faith in the currencies of the world. But there also has to be faith in the little pretty brick. I don't know why there's more faith in a pretty brick than there is in a government paper. But there is. And I know because people say it's a real asset. Okay, but why? Because we deem it to be real, even though it doesn't do anything. So if we take that and we say we don't ever have any income or we're trying to guess what thing we're looking at, I have to ask a question again. Why do I want things that can't be productive that have no income? So you might say, as Warren Buffett calls it, it is a store of wealth. That's all it is. But you can't build any wealth with it. There is no wealth building in something that does not become more productive, does not generate an income, even if we make the assumption that it will retain, because a generation from now, somebody else will say, wow, I've got to have a pretty brick. And if we do, then we can hopefully have somebody to sell our pretty brick to at some point. So without an income piece, I just don't see any reason why we would go and say, well, I want a certain percentage in pretty bricks. So as we move on and we say, well, with the great corporations of the world, if you want to own some bonds, I would do that obviously through an equity income fund, you know, a bond fund, something like that. You don't need to go out and buy individual bonds on your own. Crazy expensive. But build a portfolio and start. Say, today's the day. Today is now. And you put in 25% now. And now here's where you decide what kind of investor you are. I want to hurry up and get it in there. Or I want to stretch it out. But remember, what we're trying to do is avoid the emotions of the day. How do you do that? You set a plan and you stick to it. You set a plan and no matter what CNBC says, no matter what your heart says, no matter what your gut says about whatever it is it's saying, you follow through. Because nobody knows the future. And of my Ten Commandments, my favorite one is what you know isn't worth knowing. Because it's hard. That's a hard one for me. What I know isn't worth knowing because it's already priced in. I don't know anything that isn't already known. Or let me rephrase it. I rarely know anything that the market hasn't fully priced in. The only edge you get in investing is this, as an individual. You do not have to react or overreact to the current stimulation that's going on in the world. You don't have to. That's the only advantage you have. And so since markets tend to overreact, we tend to get better bargains than we ever should. Or we're able to sell our stocks or trim them at dearer prices, more dear, huh? Higher prices than we deserve. Okay, so let's say you're conservative, then what you should do is divide it into, say, 10% pieces from that point forward, which, of course, of the original is 7.5%, and then over the next 10 months, put in one-tenth of the rest on the first of every month, no matter what. The second way would be, if the market goes down 5% more, you put in another 25% on every 5% down. If it doesn't go down, you add another 25% every month, perhaps every 6 weeks. You decide how long you want to stretch it out and how long you want to look for a downward spike. So, A, if you want to put it all in, go ahead. My preference is to spread it out because then you won't feel like you're an idiot when it goes lower. This is a hard enough game, as I was saying. And everybody feels dumb because every time you turn around and buy something or sell something, it's the wrong decision. It's not the wrong decision. It may end up being the greatest decision you ever made, but the timing can never be perfect. It just isn't. And so it's very, very hard. And the way we see the world of taking $250,000 and turning it into a million as being a loss from $1.2 million down to a million just because we have a normal correction, that's the way we think. As absurd and ridiculous as that sounds. We make sure that the lessons to our kids and grandkids are, if you want to be a loser, then invest in the greatest investment that's ever been made. Because that's the way we phrase it every time. Every time. So for most of us, we really have to go and spread this out. So think of it, set a timetable, set a rule. Where is 5% down from here? Right? Is it in the sector you're looking at? I want to be more conservative right now. I don't blame you because you can be and still have great-looking returns long-term. And that would be the dividend payers, the equity income funds. Absolutely fantastic. Much lower risk, typically. There's been a funky couple of years here where dividend-paying stocks, as Jim and I were talking in the first hour, dividend-paying stocks have not done well. That's when I want to buy and I want to be reinvesting. So if you want to lean towards that, but the point is, if you have cash, you're fortunate enough to have cash, do something. Get off a dime, start investing, set up a plan, or how conservative you want to be, both with your investments, as well as the timing. Stretch it out to however it feels best to you, but begin tomorrow. Our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. That's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-543 with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hey, Walter, I am sorry. I did not know you were on the phone, so please do call back. We'll be happy to grab you. Perhaps even in the next segment, so that'd be great. But please do call back. Sorry to make you wait so long. Apparently, I am not getting texts, so that's a problem right here. But I am getting email, and that is dave@petsofinancial.net, P-E-T-S-O, financial.net. And with that, let's go ahead and talk about the an email here. Dave, I know you're not a fan of bonds in general in the current interest rate environment, and neither am I. But what do you think of munis, good, bad, or blah? Mike, thank you very much, and great question. And I'm actually going to roll this a little bit more than just a question about munis, because what's happened also in this market is that high yield has gotten cheap over the past, well, actually, the past few months has really helped price-wise. At any rate, munis, was the question? Let's start there. Munis of most of the sectors in the market right now are certainly much more attractive than treasuries are. Number one, you're getting paid more for munis than you are in treasuries, and it's tax-free. I mean, it's just pretty obvious to me right now, and historically, when you are at or even near the yields in treasuries, it's a very good time to buy municipal bonds. So I really do have to like them very much in this interest rate, even in this interest rate environment. Now, obviously, you can put all the caveats on there that, hey, be careful by buying. I would buy funds anyway. I don't think you want to buy individual bonds, not unless you have a lot of money. You can spread it out and you can get decent pricing. And I mean a lot, as in hundreds of thousands of dollars. Buying individual bonds is incredibly expensive. Makes little sense to me. Not when you can buy funds that are picking these up with no cost at all. Second part of that is that I would look into the closed-end bond space. Closed-end meaning the companies do not openly redeem right back. Meaning, if you take a classic open-end mutual fund, when you buy, okay, then you are buying from the mutual fund company, and when you sell or redeem your shares, you're redeeming them back. Okay? With closed-end, they raise money, let's call it $100 million, and then that is it. There's anytime you want in or out, you're literally buying shares from another holder of that fund. You don't redeem back to the company, and you don't buy them from the investment company. You buy them in the open market. This creates distortion in the prices, which is a great opportunity. So if the net asset value, meaning all of the bonds in the portfolio, cash, what have you, all add up to $10 a share, you go out in the market, you might be buying them for $9.50. You might be buying for $10.50. But you can get a discount today in most funds. And although over the past couple of years they've been trading at mild discounts, for most of the last 10 years they've been trading at a premium. Now, I think you have to be careful on these. The yields can be distorted. You have to understand they have leverage. But it is something to look at in regards to buying them literally at a discount. And that's the particular area that I have liked in municipal bonds. But now if I can flip that over and say, as we talked about here at the beginning of the year, it looks to me like high-yield bonds, particularly as we look at the closed-end funds, are moving into or have moved into what has traditionally been a very, very positive return expectation area, and that is the spreads are very, very high over treasuries. So, again, I do like that area very much, And I think that people should be exploring all kinds of opportunities within the bond space that is not classic. I should go out and buy a 10-year, 1.8 U.S. government bond. Mike, thanks for the question. Great question. And our email address is dave@petzofinancial.net. Our phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're going to take a break for Fox News and hopefully take your calls on the other side.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Do give us a call. And again, email is dave@petzofinancial.net. And a quick follow-up from Mike. Dave, how do you feel about ETFs versus closed-end bond funds? Well, good question. Especially in the bond sector, I don't like it. I suppose you could go with the exchange-traded funds, which are what ETFs are. That's what it stands for. Exchange-traded funds in the municipal bond area would not make me as nervous. But what I don't like about it is I don't like about the wild whipsaws during the day. I think you can easily overpay for the net asset value, and because it is not certainly not guaranteed on ETFs that you're going to pay the net asset value at all. And so if you're into a particularly volatile day, without all the mathematics in front of you, you don't know if you're being if you're paying too much. Certainly, if you did know you were paying too little, that would be fine. But these things can be vastly different from their net asset value. Vastly, I don't mean vastly like in 20% different. But when we get the market movements, as we all well know from all of the recent volatility here, we do understand that, in fact, this is a very difficult area to keep at its true net asset value when things get wild. So ETFs, exchange-traded funds, I do not like them day-to-day. I don't. I just simply don't in the bond space. In fact, I think they're just hideous. So I would go ahead and avoid them. And although in municipal bond land, probably not as bad. There's a little more liquidity in that space. But as far as the high-yield ETFs, I cannot imagine playing in that space at all, because you can get bonds that are totally mispriced just because right now everybody wants to buy them, or everybody wants to sell this basket of ETFs. With a closed-end fund, you're not buying and selling. They're not moving the bonds. They're not moving the market. They're not forced to buy $1 billion worth of bonds because $1 billion came in. They're not forced to sell. The portfolio itself does not change. Only investor behavior around the price you pay for that fund can change. Big difference. Big, big difference. So, Mike, I definitely prefer the closed-end funds to the ETFs. ETFs are just not, I just don't like it, and I think the recent problems of it in trading with ETFs certainly show us why we need to be very, very careful in ETF land. Okay? Thanks for the call. And again, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. And if you have any questions during the week, you can certainly reach us through our website, petzofinancial.com, P-E-T-S-O-financial.com. And also on there, we've got calculators. We've got articles to help you with your own financial planning. Further, thank goodness we finally have, we've gotten caught up, and we have the ability to get our podcasts back up and going. And we've moved away from our former broker-dealer, and now we are not encumbered by them to put those up. So we do have our podcast, so thank you to those who have written and asked. But they're there, and I think we're back several weeks, couple months now, where we've gotten all caught up. And if you'll look for those by Tuesday afternoon, they should be up each week, okay? So thanks again to everybody for asking about those. All right, I know it's tough out there, and it is certainly tough out there. It's ridiculously hard out there. It's hard to hold stocks. It's hard to think about, you know, even investing or staying invested right now. In a zero interest rate world, does any of this make any sense to anybody? Japan driving rates 2 weeks ago to negative. Europe all over, lots and lots of bonds, 2 years, 5 year bonds, negative interest rates. It's crazy. The Federal Reserve has to be on hold. We have a very mediocre jobs report. Oh, I'm sure that the administration is going to be parading around that we've dropped below 5%, but nobody believes the 5% number in a world where good jobs are not available to everybody. That's for sure. That's for sure. So what do you do in an environment like that, an environment of fear, of concern about the future? And I think that this is probably needs to be for a big, long segment at some point, maybe our, you know, opening segment sometime. But the bottom line is right now when we talk about fear and we have such an abundance of fear out there, people have to literally invest through it. It's not easy. Investing is all about emotion. It is. It's about your behavior. What are you going to do? See, people still, it's the most amazing thing to me, still want to just simply intellectualize this. Yeah, it's really just an intellectual pursuit. If I knew more about fill in the blank, right? If I knew more about currencies, if I knew more about options, if I knew more about how markets work, you know all you need to know. You really do. When you think about this game, it's really pretty simple. You have an opportunity for very low dollars, $50 a month, nothing, peanuts. We're talking about pocket change that you're allowed to invest in the greatest corporations that the world's ever seen, the most profitable. Ones that pay dividends even higher than 30-year bonds that have a history of increasing their income over the years. In fact, it's the greatest income story. I don't need to dive down that road. You've heard me do it a zillion times. But the greatest growth of income story man has ever known. And you can do it for peanuts. But it's a rich man's game. No, it's not. If I guess by definition, if $50 a month is a rich man's game, then okay, then it's a rich man's game. But otherwise, it's available to everybody. Buying office buildings is not available to everybody, is it? The only kind of real estate I would want to own. Yeah, I own my home. You're right. Do I want another house to lease out? No, I don't. The greatest investment with the highest returns. Or we can debate. We can debate, you know, pretty bricks and stuff, and it's fiat currencies, and that's what we need to do. We can debate that all day long, to no point. I don't want something that holds value. I want something that builds wealth. Don't you? Something that has a promise that I can have an increasing stream of income all the days of my life. At least I could. I might win. People always have won. And we turn this into a game of, if I only knew more, you know, I could zig and zag, I can do options, I could, you know, do stop-loss thingies. And I'm not even going to talk about being driven into the absurdity that will be yacked about here in a couple hours. Yeah, you can get market returns with no risk, because we all know that's true, right? You can't. We all know that. And so when people are exaggerating, frankly, I'm done talking about or trying to figure out what you're exaggerating about. We don't need to discuss it because I won't be investing in whatever it is you're pimping. $150 a month. Let's go with that. I'll leave you in this segment. $150 per month investment for the last 30 years. Just 30 years. And you just blindly do it. Just, I don't know what I'm doing. Duh. So you just put money in. And by the way, we decide we're just going to put that into just a moderate risk thing. By the way, we're not cherry picking anything here. This would be what some people would call, like, you know, a Morningstar 3-star fund, okay? Right up the gut, blue chip, blah, okay? I'm not going to tell you what company it is because it doesn't matter. It's company A. $150 a month. Through multiple 50% declines in the market. If you just left it alone, $150 a month would grow to over $1 million. Why do we make this hard? Well, I don't have 30 years left. Well, I don't this. Well, I don't that. Well, I should have, would have, could have done something different. Yeah, you would have, could have, should have done a lot of things different in life. Yeah, I know. Maybe you don't have 30 years left. Nobody has a lease on life. Does it change the dynamic of this is all it's about? By the way, just to make it easy, we really only invested in this for 20 years. Stopped investing after that. You see, it just isn't, it's a matter of time. It's not a matter of timing. It's not a matter of figuring out what the market's doing. It's a matter of us behaving. Now go behave. Don't quit making it so hard. And give us a call at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Oh, come on, it's time to ring us up and give us a call. Do give us a call. I know. It's a difficult time for sure. Is it really about oil? No. Is it really about China? No. Is it really about a global recession? I don't know. The markets predict, this is where people misunderstand things a lot. Are we going to go into a global recession? Are things really slow? Well, we human beings have a great propensity, we really do, for seeing everything conceivably wrong, and very little could be right, could go right. Honestly, it's the way we are. It's the way we're wired, and it's, it does not make us very good investors for sure. Probably has a pretty big impact on all aspects of our life, to always see the negative. But that you didn't tune in for that, but the point of this is to say, is the world really in distress? Is it? I don't know. There's more people in the world. Corporate profits globally are growing. We got really big problems with nut jobs out there. There's no question about it. We've got really big problems with the president in retreat everywhere. Everywhere in all ways except more regulation, more anti-business regulation, as much as possible before we leave office. And I know that's, okay, great, that's good. I didn't tune in to have you bash the president. I don't care if you're on the left or on the right. Very few people think this guy's doing a good job. And why is this important? Because it makes us not feel safe. It makes us very concerned for the economy. Anybody that understands anything about history, about probability, about human nature at all, knows that bigger government is less freedom and it's less prosperity for all. In every government, in every place, everywhere, for all time. And that's not been the case here for a long time. We get more. We get more regulation. We get Obamacare. What am I going to do about my health care? All of this adds to the burden of uncertainty in people's lives. Does uncertainty make you feel better about investing or worse? Do we feel good about investing when the world seems crazy? It makes it hard. I get it. It's hard to say, wait a minute, people are living longer, healthier, wealthier lives. Period. Way longer. And when people do, what does that do to the GDP of the world? It grows. What does that do to the profitability of the corporations that serve more and more people with more and more abundance everywhere? Their profits go up. So people that play short-term moves in the market are guessing. They're guessing against the long-term trajectory. The long-term trajectory of greater growth, greater abundance, greater wealth all over the world. That's the trajectory. So we can play the, I need to buy gold, I need to buy silver, I need to buy whatever pretty brick there is, because right now it's going to end, just like it was going to end in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, pretty soon in 2000s, right after the bubble. Remember the internet bubble? That burst, that's it, we're done. And then, of course, we've got Asian flu. We've got the Asian currency crisis. Yawn, yawn, yawn. We've got Europe imploding. We've got the Great Recession. We've got everything under the sun over and over again to talk about why this time is different and, in fact, the world will end. And it doesn't. I think it's a big call. I really do. And that's why I do think it's important for us to really gain a real perspective on what's really going on long term, rather than get caught up in the short term noise. And it can be so noisy. I know. I know. It's hard. It always is. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, dave@petsofinancial.net. We're going to take our final break, and there'll be plenty of time, so please do ring us up. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hey, our final segment upcoming. If you have a question, please do shoot it over real quickly. And I apologize. We're just having a bit of a struggle today on callers. I know a couple of you have, actually about three people now at least, have called in, and we just haven't been able to get that message to me clearly. So I apologize for that. Hopefully you hang on to those questions for next week. But those folks, unfortunately, then we get to a break where we obviously, I'm talking with Ronaldo and we're ready to roll, but people are hanging up. So I apologize for lack of calls today. We didn't mean to cut anybody off or keep rambling myself, thinking that nobody was out there calling. So anyway, appreciate those people that did ring in, and please do give us a call back next week or right now, 580-KIDO. So I want to wrap this up a little bit today with just some simple thoughts, okay? Because I think that sometimes when we think about these things you can call it simplistically, because that has a connotation like, well, we're not really thinking this through. I get that, and I get that that's sometimes the way people think of it, if it's real simple. But that's exactly how and why we run into trouble as well. Okay, so we have to be careful with simple. Simple explanation of the markets like we started with today, right? Hey, you know, oil's up, so the market's up. Oh, it's all tied to oil, but then it's not. It's not tied to oil. Or is it tied to oil? Some days it is, some days it's not. But you can't have it some days it is and some days it's not. And that's the whole reason why the market's doing what it's doing. It is not. And it's confusing right now. So sometimes when it's confusing, it's broken. And I would say the market mechanism right now is broken. Okay, A, is that an opportunity or is that a problem? How do you react? What do? If you see it as opportunity, then prices are low and should be taken advantage of, right? If you see it as a problem, then no matter how low prices have gotten, you should get out. Fair enough? Of course, I don't think that makes sense to bail out. Of course. Well, yeah, but that's, you know, you're always saying stocks are good. Okay. Over history, yeah, I think that you should say that stocks have been good always in all times. Not all short periods of time, but all lifetimes. Stocks have worked. All of them. Even if you started investing right before a huge downturn, all of them have been good. And when we simply break it down sometimes, I think we have to break it down simplistically. We have to say something like, okay, how often, say, does a moderate risk mutual fund go up on a one-year basis? Okay, well, I need one that goes back a long ways. Okay, so this one goes back like 80 years. Actually, a little more than that. I'm not going to tell you the name because I don't want to do all the disclosures. It doesn't really matter. But two-thirds of the time, it's up on a one-year basis. Two-thirds of the time. 2-to-1 odds that I just pick it for 1 year, boom, it's up. On three-year basis, can you imagine investing in something that historically has outperformed any other investment, but on a three-year basis, 86% of the time it makes money? And on average, it's better than anything else. And on a five-year basis, 92% of the time, I win. In an investment that's been better than anything else. And on a 10-year basis, 100% of the time. Seriously. That's the perspective I think we sometimes simply need. Have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzl and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future.